There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday. Lots to do this hour. And our leadoff batter here, it's somebody I've listened to talk with Jeff Poore a bunch on his show. And she does international news for Breitbart, Breitbart.com. But then hearing her discussion of the situation in Cuba, I had my attention even beyond where I normally am and wrapped up in what she was saying. As I've said on the show for many, many years and talked about on social media here over the last couple of days. So I early days of my life were spent in Dade County in South Florida. And the most of my friends growing up were children that their parents left Cuba because of Castro. And I heard that. I sat around the kitchen table and heard those stories growing up, and that stuck with me. And then I heard Frances Martel talking with Jeff. She's one of those children whose parents left Cuba. And so her perspective on what's going on in Cuba and what's going on in South Florida and around the country where Americans are standing up, hopefully in big numbers with the Cuban people, joins us now. Frances Martel, thanks for your time.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
A real pleasure. Let's talk about this before we get into the news of the day in the last few days. So your family moved from Cuba, right? And you were you're one of those children like I grew up with.
Yeah, my parents are both actually from Cardenas, Cuba, which is about an hour, 2 hours out of Havana to the east. They came here as teenagers and met here in New Jersey. I'm a Jersey girl, born and bred, but my blood is Cuban, and I grew up in a Cuban community. You know, my parents' friends were people who were former political prisoners, people who had escaped on rafts. That was all very, you know, part and parcel to my upbringing here.
And it gives you a perspective, obviously, on Cuba that most Americans wouldn't have, most non-Cuban Americans wouldn't have. So walk us through kind of what has happened here over the last few days. We can talk about everything from what's going on at the Malecon in Havana to what I saw on the Palmetto yesterday down in South Florida and on Calle Ocho, and I'll kind of bring that all together. What is the issue? For some reason, I have trouble believing the administration when they say this is about not getting the vaccine in Cuba.
No, it's definitely not about any vaccine. I think what American audiences who don't pay attention to Cuba, you know, every day like we do in the community didn't see for the past decade, two decades, is that there is a huge dissident community in Cuba. There are organizations that protest every week and get arrested every week. There are people who have gone on hunger strike dozens of times. So this didn't come out of nowhere. This came out of years and years of effort by people who have endured intense physical suffering to wake the Cuban people up and to inspire them to not have fear to combat the regime. There's an argument to be made that the coronavirus pandemic was the last drop that really pushed the people out into the street. But what it actually did, it wasn't that Cubans are complaining that they're getting infected at high rates. They're complaining that their government opened up to tourists as a financial ploy, as a money grab, where basically in mid-2020, when Italy was, you know, the country with the biggest number of cases and the biggest outbreak, the Cuban government actively asked Italians to come be tourists in Cuba while not shutting down schools, not implementing any safety protocol for its own people. And that total disregard, you know, they're developing a vaccine to try to show up the United States, but no one is getting the Cuban vaccine, and that's money that could have gone to basic health services, to getting aspirin and, you know, acetaminophen for the average person. Instead, they're using it to try to embarrass the United States. So that's what the COVID connection is, but really this is about a communist regime that uses the island as a, you know, it's a parasite that just thrives off of the suffering of the people and only cares about the people so long as they can use them to continue living their lavish lifestyles.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. Trouble getting acetaminophen or something while the money's being redirected for to show up the United States. You know, we're told by Michael Moore and others how great the Cuban healthcare system is. It must seem to be failing that test right now.
The Cuban healthcare system is an atrocity. If you are a normal Cuban citizen with no connections to the communist regime, you have hospitals that have basically no medication, not even cots to sleep on. And so the question is, what is this great healthcare that people are bragging about on the left? And it's because all the money that should go to things on the island, hospitals, clinics, medicine, doctors, they invest that into something that we refer to as the Cuban slave doctor system, where they use the academic institutions to breed doctors, essentially, and then they send them abroad as a publicity stunt. And these doctors don't get a say in where they go. They don't get paid for what they do. They just get sent to very dangerous parts of the world where the Cuban regime has alliances, and they actually pretend to give medical services. We have doctors who have defected on the record saying that they made up patient names, they fabricated records, they don't actually treat anybody. And so the Cuban regime then comes out, puts up pictures of these doctors and says, you know, we are a medical powerhouse. Look at how we're helping with the Ebola pandemic, or, you know, how we sent doctors to Venezuela to help, or, you know, pick whatever country you want. And in reality, they're not actually doing anything, and these are doctors that should be at home treating their own patients, and they're not allowed to, and they're used as slaves.
Just joining us, talking to Frances Martell with Breitbart, and I could ask you, a couple of the tougher questions here, and I think about it, like, so while I was born down there, still have family down there in South Florida, and grew up like that, the overwhelming bulk of my life has been here in Mobile, and Havana's Mobile's sister city. I have this, I like to travel, I have the stories that were painted for me in those houses in Miami back in the 1970s of what people's ranches or their fincas looked like, and the different, you know, I've always wanted to go to Cuba. There's tourism, but I said, I can't go. I can't go at this point, not, you know, not to give money to this regime. But there's a lot of people that have traveled for tourism, that money going in, like you just said, with the Italians. At the same time, I look at that money coming in, and then the question of the embargo. The people I know still tell me the embargo is good, but I worry, how much is the embargo hurting the Cuban people? You know, we've been doing it for 60 years. We've not unseated the communists. From your perspective, more important than mine, what should we be doing and not doing?
Well, the simple answer is we should have an embargo, because what we have now isn't really an embargo. Medication and humanitarian aid is not blocked by the embargo. Families, Cuban American families, send medicine, toilet paper, clothes, all of the time. So the embargo doesn't affect any of that. And then there are exceptions to the embargo that make it very easy to go and do tourism there. President Trump got rid of a couple of them, the people-to-people exchange, which was abused all the time, But the group people-to-people for a while existed. You know, people can go to Cuba if they really want to. They just have to come up with a good enough excuse. And so I think if we had actual sanctions that prevented that, if we had a real embargo, then maybe we could talk about, have the conversation of, does it work? But what we have now is not a real embargo. And so the argument that the embargo doesn't work, to me, just falls flat, because we haven't had a real embargo. So how could we even talk about that?
That's great information for a lot of people, because if you just get a flyby news story about it, it'll say, well, we've had the embargo 60 years. The embargo has not been successful. Why do we continue to do that? But in your point, it's maybe embargo in name only, not the level of what we would picture an embargo against Iran or some country elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely right. And you know, one of the biggest culprit groups, and I hate to say this, is Cuban Americans often go to Cuba. They use the excuse that they have family there. And, of course, many people have very legitimate reasons to go. They have dying parents. They have family that are very much in need. But when you go there, everything on the island is owned by the Castro regime. And the tourist locations, the hotels and the restaurants specifically, are owned by the Cuban military. So every dime that you spend there, even if you're a Cuban American going to visit your mom, if you eat at any restaurant, that's money that's going to go to a bullet that is now in the head of a protester, or prisons that are used for priests and Yoruba, you know, Santeria priests and Catholics. So there's no way of getting around that. When you're on the island, you're going to have to spend money to eat, and that money is going to go to repression. So I think stopping that money is a very big deal here. And you know what? Maybe it won't work. Maybe the embargo will end up not working. But again, like, I don't think we're in a position to have a conversation of does the embargo work when you have thousands of people from America traveling to Cuba every year.
You put it in perspective. Maybe people will think about that if you go and you're sitting down to a plate of ropa viejas or platanos or arroz con leche or whatever, that money is not going to those people that run that. That is going to the Cuban military.
Absolutely. And there are corporations. You know, you can look this up and see Gaesa, which is one of the biggest tourism corporations, is owned by military leaders. And who runs the military? It's the Castro family. Fidel Castro had like 10 kids. Raul Castro had another bunch. And they all run everything. So that's another sort of myth to dispel here, is that Díaz-Canel is the figurehead president of the regime. But the nuts and bolts of how that government works, that's all run by the Castro family. It's a mafia.
Okay, and you write about that too, and so many, and y'all have got to go to Breitbart and follow Francis on there, and the writing is fantastic. But you talk about this kind of rolling out the figurehead. So Canal, you know, is there, but he is really not. Maybe I guess they think that seeing Raul is more popular. I mean, 90-year-old Raul Castro, they roll him out basically Weekend at Bernie style. To me, that would make it worse. If I'm the communist and I'm trying to get people settled down, I see Raul Castro, I think nothing's changed.
Well, yeah, exactly. But you also think Raul was Fidel's executioner. Fidel gave the orders, but Raul did the killing. So when they trot out Raul, it's a message saying, we're not messing around. Uh-huh. We're going to kill you. We don't care what the international community is going to say about human rights violations. And something that worries me a little bit about the mainstream media coverage of these protests, too, is the focus on Díaz-Canel. And the protesters do this, too. You know, they shout slurs at Díaz-Canel, and obviously he's there for that reason, to be the lightning rod. But if you take out Díaz-Canel and you leave all the Castro cousins, brothers, grandkids, everybody running the regime, you're not changing anything. And so I think that's why we have to kind of emphasize that this is a family business. And yeah, Raul's 90 years old. He doesn't know where he is, but he's the one with the reputation of being the killer, and he's, you know, the godfather of the mafia family. So I think we should direct as much focus to getting all of them out as possible, not just Díaz-Canel.
What insight there for what's happening. Let's talk about the other part of this. You've got the protests going on around the country here, people standing up to help the people in Cuba. But how do we do that? I mean, there's a discussion going on online. I'm following everything on Twitter. There's the supplies to go in. I know some families out of South Florida were trying to go in and take supplies. But the other part of this is intervention, right? Let's just get down to the brass tacks of this. Are the call for intervention, what does that intervention mean? Is that military? What are folks here, Cuban Americans, calling for?
Well, it depends on who you ask. This is a very, very hot question. But I would say if you ask most of the Cuban Americans who are out on the street protesting, they're going to say they want military intervention. They want anything that's going to end the killing. And a big part of this is, and not to sort of shoehorn the Second Amendment issue into this, but the Cuban people are completely unarmed, and they're being attacked viciously with people with heavy weaponry, with people with attack dogs. So they are completely unarmed. So I think think there's a contingent of Cuban Americans who would like to see U.S. military intervention. I mean, Guantanamo, we already have a base there. Guantanamo's right there. But others just want them to be armed. They don't want the U.S. to do, you know, they don't want American men dying for Cubans when the Cubans are willing to fight. They just want their cousins to have a chance to have weapons to fight back. So that is part of the intervention. The other big part of this is the internet. A lot of Cubans want the U.S. to use its superior technology to make it easier for Cubans to access the internet, because the regime is shutting down the internet on purpose and then going door to door and disappearing people from their homes who are suspected of having participated in the protests. So without the internet, we don't really know who's there and who's not. It's been very difficult to report who's been arrested, who's missing, who's killed. And so if there's anything that we could do using our gigantic telecommunications corporations to override the jamming of the internet by the government, that is, I think, a pretty universally accepted way that we could intervene without, you know, sending troops in.
Yeah, I was wondering how, I was in a discussion with an old friend from South Florida yesterday about that. Could we, whether it be coming out of Guantanamo or ships off the coast, could we offer that connectivity, internet connectivity? You know, how far does that ramp it up? What, you know, does that step it up to a degree where, you know, China or another player comes in? I don't know. I mean, you have to prove that we're bringing internet in or unlocked, you know, phones that are on a different system. I mean, is that something you think there's any appetite for? I hadn't seen anything from President Biden that makes me think that's happening.
Well, President Biden, with all due respect to the office of the presidency, is completely out to lunch on this one. I mean, he won't even accept that they're protesting about communism. So I don't expect anything from there. But Governor DeSantis in Florida has said that he is looking into ways that the government can enhance internet connectivity. I'm not a tech expert, so I'm not exactly sure what kind of technology we could use, but I know that at the very least, you know, at the governor level, we have people looking into that sort of thing. And we also know that there's USAID activities that were exactly this. I mean, Alan Gross, who was released during the Obama era, the USAID employee, was arrested in part because he was smuggling in Wi-Fi technology and different internet instruments. So we probably have assets on the ground, even through the U.S., I guess it's an embassy now there, that we could use. And we have Gitmo. As to the answer of, you know, does this get China involved? China's already involved. The Chinese Foreign Ministry said yesterday that they are willing to do whatever they have to do to support the Cuban communist regime, and that they think that this is all a U.S. government plot. So I don't think we're at a point where we have to worry about angering the Chinese or the Russians, because yeah, the Kremlin also said they're willing to do whatever they have to do to defend Cuba. So they're already there.
Francis, your reporting is fantastic on this. I hope to get you back on the show soon to talk more about this. If they want to follow you, of course, they can go to Breitbart.com. And on social media, where do folks go?
Yeah, I'm most active on Twitter at Francis Martel, Francis with an E, and I'm doing what I can to spread the word on these protests, so hopefully we'll meet you there.
You got friends in Alabama that will help you do that as well, so thank you for your time.
Thank you.
All right, Francis Martel, we're coming right back. More Midday Mobile. I got your text in here. I got a couple comments on that. People that have taken that tourist trip to Cuba and their reaction to it as well when we return.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. It's Midday Mobile. And get your calls and text here at 343-0106. 343-0106. Got a text from somebody that did that trip down to Cuba. I desperately want to do that. I love that, of course, our history here in Mobile and the link with Havana. I love that part. I'd love to go down there. But as I said, who are you financing and what are they doing? I mean, this is 90 miles off our coast. And did you hear the term, Francis, as people are being disappeared, let alone being beaten in the streets? This is still going on. It's 2021, still going on. I'm going to talk about this when we return. And hit us up on the text line and the phone line, 343-0106. News is next.
listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. Midday Mobile, Wednesday style. Glad to have you here. Text line 343-0106. Same for the phone. And if you want to use that talkback feature, remember the brand new FM Talk 1065 app. I can let you do all three of those. So you can text us, you can call us, you can leave us a message right there. So check that out. In addition, you've got all the different, I'll tell you what, we're going to get to it in a second because there's, we keep talking about that. Of course, the streaming that's there in the podcast, but that is the tip of the proverbial iceberg. And we'll talk more about that coming up. Right now, I want y'all to say hello to my friend Angelo from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry, and also 73.8% of the show, Two Guys and Some Change. Hey, Angelo.
Hey, man. How's my number one OpenL sales guy doing today?
I'm doing good. Have I met my mark for the month?
I think you have. We had another person come in today and say, hey, I want to get that knife that Sean likes so much. And that doesn't really narrow it down, unfortunately. But we just pointed at the wall of OpenL's behind him and then let him start drilling.
Well, okay, let's talk about how this happened because, y'all, I came to this. So my friend Angela started saying, you got to check out these OpenL knives. And if y'all hung around me long enough, it's a little hard to change habits. I'm like, yeah, I don't need to get in any other knife. I've got knives. I'm good. You know, I got skinned knives. I got pocket knives. And Angela keeps going, no, you got to come see them. Come see them. And I came down there and, so for years now, I've been a big fan of them because they're great, well-made knives and they come in a variety of sizes and the price point's right. So you can have one for yourself and buy a couple for a gift. And I've never had anybody that I gave one to say, man, I didn't like that knife. They come back and go, that was a cool gift. Thanks, man. So yeah, it comes from the heart, man. I love that product.
Well, one of the things that's always amazed and impressed me with the OpenL's is the fact that the quality is excellent. And like you were mentioning, the variety from all the different sizes to the fact that some are stainless steel and it's a high quality stainless steel. Some are traditional carbon. They have all these cool different wood handles. So whether you need an outdoorsy knife, whether you need something for the kitchen or the barbecue grill, or whether you need what we used to always call a gent's knife or a lady's knife, you know, something a little nicer that you can carry in your pocket and that's going to freak somebody out when you pull it out, OpenL's pretty well got everything covered.
It does. And seriously, y'all, it's a great idea. Just a pro tip here. Buy a few of them and put them in the sock drawer. Maybe even pre-wrap them if you want to. And then you get the old, by the way, you've got a birthday party to go to or it's, you know, this holiday or whatever you got to take a gift for. You're like, I got a gift everybody wants. You have one of those OpenL knives. Let's talk about precious metals for a second, Angelo. How are we looking in silver and gold?
Yeah, gold and silver have both started to climb a little bit. Gold is over $1,800 an ounce and still climbing a little slowly and steadily. Silver is over 26 and, again, still climbing. We have our second shipment of the Type 2 American Silver Eagles due to arrive tomorrow, as well as some of the Type 2 gold coins. We have a lot of the regular generic 1-ounce bars, 10-ounce bars, things like that. So lots of gold and silver in stock. Things are starting to move and climb up a little bit, but the activity level has still been strong with all the metals.
All right. Tell folks how to find you.
Yeah, in the real world, Midtown, 2204 Government Street, just down the street from Whataburger. Online, mobilebaycoins.com. You can also follow us on Instagram, on Facebook. And if you want to check out the radio show, do that right here, FM Talk 106.5, every Tuesday evening, 6 to 7. If you miss it, check out the website for the podcast, Two Guys and Some Change.
Thanks, Angelo.
Have a good one, Sean.
Hey, you too. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. All right, some of your text here. David's saying one of the largest exports out of the Port of Mobile is poultry going to the island nation of Cuba. I think lumber as well, right, David? And I'm telling you, it's a thing that tears at me because if it were not for what Francis Martel talked about in the Cuban regime there, I would have loaded the Sullivans up and we'd have gone. I mean, too many connections in my life to that island that I've got to, haven't even brought in the Hemingway books, you know, as a boy reading them. So absolutely would love to go. But think about that. She says the military owns the restaurants. So not even the Communist Party as per se, even though it's the same bunch of folks. And that money goes directly to finance the military. I mean, so you do that. If you knew your money's going directly to what you're seeing on the streets down there, the little bit you're seeing, how do you feel about that? A lot of people saying they enjoyed Frances. I did as well. We're going to try to get her back on very soon. Her perspective is great, you know, from an academic level, but also having, she's a child of people that leftist teenagers out of Cuba. And you know, you got that situation going on 90 miles off the coast. I don't know. So this is another challenge, too. What kind of assistance do we do? Think about foreign aid. Okay. And let's talk about what we do and we don't do. Right. There's right now going on around the planet. I don't know if we, you know, that story, and I'm focused on Cuba, and I'm honest by why, not just location, but some kind of deep seated desire to for the benefit of the Cuban people. But you've got a situation going on in Cuba. You got Ethiopia and Eritrea. Right now you have wars going on. You have the situation once again with the Chinese and the Uyghurs, and then also what has happened in Hong Kong. You have obviously what is now, as we are pulling out completely of Afghanistan, the fall of regions of Afghanistan, going right back to the Taliban. You know, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. You know, Taliban was in charge 20 years ago, and now they're going right back in charge. South Africa, thank you, Terry. South African situation. And Terry, you're right. It barely does make the news, the South African situation. I mean, so where do we, as a nation, do we help? You know what I'm saying? It's a tough one there. Colombia, there's another situation in Colombia. So where do we help? I'm focused on Cuba, but at least I'm going to tell you frankly, I know that I'm not. It's because of something in my heart, right? But where, if you looked at it in a cold, calculated manner, would you help at all? I could say strategically, so let's take the heart out of it, strategically, the reason Cuba's been of great interest to our country. Oh, Haiti. I left Haiti out of it. They just killed the president in Haiti. I mean, that's pretty close, too. But Cuba's the closest, right? 90 miles. Everybody's gone. Who's gone to Key West and stood at the thing 90 miles from Cuba right there. Where do you help? I mean, do you say, okay, it's because these people are fighting for freedom? We've seen what that's done in areas of the world where they really didn't appreciate, or there weren't enough people to appreciate that freedom. It looks like they're calling for it in Cuba, right? I mean, the situation in like in Iraq or Afghanistan, I'm not saying there's not people there that absolutely want freedom and want some sort of democracy there, but they're not rising up in the streets. Now, they did in Iran. Remember what happened in Iran, the Green Revolution, and they were shut down. Cuba, they're showing us, right? I think what we're seeing is they're showing us they want to change. I think we all knew folks would want to change there, but they're showing us. They're risking all. What do we do? I mean, if Francis talked about communications, trying to get the information. You know, the government there can shut off the phones, right? So if somebody has a phone, they have a cell phone or whatever, government can shut off service. They're in control of all that. Think about that. Once again, it's not all one world, y'all. They can just shut off all communications. So what can we do? You know, do we go in there and maybe we're already doing it? I tell you what, I wrote a note down while I was talking to Francis about this, and it's funny. This is a subject that came up on the outdoor show that I do with Mike Ward on Saturday mornings, which, by the way, this Saturday for the rodeo, special two-hour, not at our normal time. We'll have a replay on at 7 on Saturday morning, but then from 10 to noon, I'm live from the rodeo site this weekend. So hopefully you can come by and see us. We'll be doing a live FM Talk 106.5 outdoors from 10 to noon. But a subject, we were doing a show a few weeks ago, maybe a month or two ago on there, and we're talking to, you know, our audience, people that fish, and we're talking about safety equipment to have on your boat. And we came up with different things you ought to think about that the price point has really come down on, and good things if you're going to venture out of the, you know, out of the mouth of Mobile Bay and head out that you need to have on your boat. One of them was a device called and I think there's other people that make it, but the one I'm familiar with because I own it, Garmin makes it, and it's called an InReach. Actually, I have the InReach Mini. And I bought this thing for being out west and being in the backcountry in the mountains of Colorado where you couldn't get a cell phone signal, and we were actually just trying to contact group to group. You know, like, hey, guys, we need y'all to come over here, and radios wouldn't work and cell phones weren't getting signals. So I bought this device. And what it does is it takes your cell phone and links it to a satellite, and you can turn it on and turn it off by the, you know, and I know you're talking about, well, they're satellite phones. Yeah. And those Iridiums and all that are extremely expensive. These Garmin units are, I think mine was maybe, it wasn't cheap, but it was $250, maybe $300 somewhere in there when I bought it. What about something like that? That we could drop into Cuba that takes your phone, and instead of having to use the cellular service there on the island, it connects to satellite and bounces messages out that way. And then there's probably other manufacturers. I'm not here to plug Garmin. That's just the one I'm familiar with. But other devices like that that we could drop in there that the people could use to communicate. I don't know. It's just an idea I had. Hey, speaking of equipment to have on your boat, there's some very big boats that have lots of safety equipment on them that are heading out this weekend, not only in the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, but the Blue Marlin Grand Championship out of the wharf. My friend Jim Cox joins us next to talk more.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here. This segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK, online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. That junk could be in the following locations: in your attic, in what used to be the guest room, in the storage building in the backyard, could be in a storage unit off-site, could be at your office, could be at a house you're getting ready to sell. Listen, you got the junk, you need it gone, you need my buddy Trey with 1-800-GOT-JUNK, and setting the appointment. I know that's always the thing that, like I do it, but I, you know, one of those things where they go, well, they'll be there sometime between Tuesday and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m., and you're like, I don't have time for this. Okay, they get that. So when you call 1-800-GOT-JUNK or go online, they'll find a day that works for you, a window of time that works for you, and then they set an appointment, and then they show up. How about that? They quote your price on the job. If you say yes, they get to work right then and get the junk gone. Check them out online, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com, or pick up the phone and call 1-800-GOT-JUNK. All right, y'all say hello to my buddy Jim Cox. It's been too long since I've seen this man, and it's time to talk about the greatest show in sport fishing. You got how much money up for grabs here in the Blue Marlin Grand Championship?
Well, we'll know the optional awards, the cash optional awards. Uh-huh. They've just started placing their, you don't really want to say bets because that might give the wrong impression.
No.
It's an optional cash award. So that I would, Sean, we're going to be 60 something boats. And I would say when the dust settles before tomorrow, 1.5, give or take a few, 1.5 million on the line this weekend at the wharf.
Holy cow. I mean, this is what brings, the best fishing teams with their fantastic fiberglass here to the wharf and fishing out of our backyard. Talk about this, too. The teams out there, this is the best of the best. This has become, y'all put this thing on the map and people travel to fish this baby.
Really do, and it really is. And that's what it's not us who says that. It's the captains, because they know. I mean, it doesn't matter what industry any of us are in. We know who our peers are and who are really good at what they do. And it really has become kind of one of the hallmarks of this event. And that's why we got boats from Texas that have come here, boats from Florida, of course, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana. And, you would agree, Sean, we all feel that we have the best fishermen in the Gulf anywhere in the country, no matter what we're chasing. So it really is. The competition is a big part of this, and it's why it's so special when any of these teams win this, because it's not just the money and the prestige, but they really feel like they have bested the best in the Gulf this weekend.
Yeah, and it's a great place to do it. That's one of the great parts of this story. And Jim, you're a blue water fisherman, you love this stuff, and maybe the marlin fishing was this good when I was a kid. It just didn't get the. It seems to me that we have really a story to tell about billfish in the Gulf of Mexico, especially this time of year.
It's unbelievable that it's as good as there is anywhere in the world, and that's a pretty bold statement to make, and it's very true. And Sean, it's just because things change with technology and everything else. I mean, these boats, some of these boats are going to, they won't put a line in the water until they're 300 miles from Perdido Pass. I mean, so the boats are bigger and they're faster and they carry more fuel. So, you can go more places to fish than you used to when, you were a kid, or maybe when I first moved down here. It really has changed. And because you're kind of a bit of a gearhead and kind of a guy who understands and likes mechanics and stuff, it is something to see a 92-foot sport fishing boat with two 500-gallon fuel bladders in the cockpit, because they know just how much fuel they're going to burn this weekend going to try to find this winning fish.
Hey, let's talk about the other side of it, too. For those of us that are on land here, it's also the fishing is rivaled by the showmanship back at the wharf. Talk about that.
Yeah, and that's really what makes it so special for the teams and for the spectators. The teams love it because we do focus so much time and energy on the show. And think about this, Sean. And so in 2018, we had our biggest tournament here at the wharf for this event. I think we had 72 boats fish, and it was great, great night. 2019, we didn't have the tournament because we had a tropical storm in the Gulf that week. 2020, we had the tournament, but it was not the greatest show in sport fishing because it was the middle of a pandemic. We just kind of weighed the fish and everybody kept our distance. So it's been 3 years since we've really been able to do what we do here at the wharf, and we are all so ready to do that. So the big Jumbotron is being installed tomorrow morning. The Flaming Marlins are full of gas, and you know, the lights, the music, it's like part rock and roll show, part sporting event, and 100% part of the weekend fun here along the Alabama Gulf Coast. I'm it's what I love to do, and I can't wait to get back in front of a big crowd and be excited and show off these great fish this weekend.
Yeah, you do it so very well, and you have the assistance of, you know, Flaming Blue Marlins, so that helps.
Hard to screw that up.
that helps as a co-host there. All right, talk to us about if – kind of give us the inside Jim Cox track. If we're going to bring the family, come down, kind of what's the best time?
So you may or may not realize this, but sometimes traffic heading into Orange Beach, like on a Saturday in July, is a bit of an issue. So I'm just throwing that out there in case you're not aware. So we have the weigh-ins Friday night from 5 to 7, and that's if someone has a blue marlin to weigh. So that means someone's caught one on Thursday, or maybe they caught one on Friday morning, and they decide they want to come in and weigh it, and that's from 5 until 7. And we'll certainly alert everyone through social media if that's the case. But then on Saturday night, that's the night that all 60-something boats have to come back to be here to weigh in their fish. That starts at 5. And we'll have teams waiting at 5 o'clock to weigh their fish. So I would say you want to get down here, you know, somewhere 4 o'clock or so, get parked and get relaxed, get the kids a Dippin' Dots, get the adults maybe a cocktail to walk around with. So, you know, get here around 4. The one thing I do want to mention, there's also a Brantley Gilbert concert Saturday night that starts right after our weigh-in. So that's going to be another 9,000 people here on property at the wharf. So it's going to be crowded. If you want to come by boat, we 100% get that. We get how many people are on the water on the weekends, but we have no room at the marina. You cannot come to the marina by boat if you don't have a slip here, but you can go. There's a little cove right across from the wharf, across the intercoastal here. We have a boat shuttle that'll run you back and forth. Pull up your boat there, cool. Anchor up, call the wharf marina on channel 71. We'll send our little shuttle skiff over to pick you up starting at 6 o'clock, and we'll run them back and forth all the way till midnight. So if you want to come, you can come by boat that way, but just don't try to come into the wharf. And, you know, you don't want to be in your 21-foot center console trying to, like, maneuver around a 92-foot Viking that's trying to back in and weigh a fish. That we know who would win that battle.
Yeah, you'll lose that one. But well done on y'all for the shuttle. That's a great idea. And also was checking out the website. People can go there and get more information. And if for some reason, like, you qualify for mass for shut-ins or something like that, you do have a streaming of the tournament, right, that we can watch online?
Absolutely. So we'll stream it live on our website at BlueMarlinGrandChampionship.com. We'll also be on our Facebook page. We'll be live. You'll be able to see all the fish come in here. And, again, we're really excited. The weather's going to be great offshore. All these teams are super excited. It's going to be a calm weekend offshore. So they're ready to go. We're ready to go, and we're certainly ready for we're ready for this weekend to return. We've all missed it so very much.
All right, last question. We've got 30 seconds left here. This is just really self-serving. How far is the blue water right now? How far out?
So it's gotten a little closer. Like, I just got a report. There's a nice rip around Dakika that runs about 150 miles east and west. It's pushing north. So, Sean, about 125 miles, and you could be out there in the blue water.
All right, we got to put the fuel bladders on the boat and go. Jim Cox, as always, man, I appreciate our time, and best of luck this weekend.
All right, thank y'all.
All right, Blue Marlin Grand Championship going on. Man, what a place to live. Just this weekend, everything going on. If you're bored, it's your own fault, right? I'll be back with you tomorrow. Feinbaum next.